It got quiet, so I'm going to officially call the Joint Taxes and Property Tax Committee meeting, mini session, to order. And first of all, Mayor Peterson, City of Winona, thank you so much for hosting us here today. And Mayor Peterson said this was a WPA project, as someone had mentioned earlier, built in 1939 with some additions. So it's a beautiful facility, and we're happy to be here. I'd also like to thank Representative Pawlowski and Winona State University President Scott Olson for co-chairing the planning committee that kind of brought this mini session to order. I think it was 30 years ago in 1989 was the last time we had a mini session. I know Representative Pawlowski was part of that back at that time. And also thank Speaker Hortman for making sure that this happened, providing that leadership. Because I, back home, and I'm from Dilworth, Minnesota, Paul Marquardt, and we'll be introducing here in just a second. But I hear a lot of times people will say, you know, everything's in St. Paul. You know, everything's centered around St. Paul. When can we, it hurts our accessibility and so forth. So the idea of the mini session is to get out and hear from people back where they live, right here, and be more accessible, more responsive, and hopefully the discussions we have over the next few days here in Winona will really can set the framework for a lot of the important discussions we're going to have when we go back February 11th for the next session. So just want to thank everyone for being here and participating on that. Before we go any further, I'm supposed to make some announcements here. Is that restrooms are available on all three floors of this building. Handicapped accessible restrooms are available on the second floor. Conference rooms on all three floors are reserved for use by House members should they need a private space, and rooms are marked with the House of Representatives mini session logo. Also, if you have any concerns, Wi-Fi access is open and labeled City of Winona. And if anyone has any concerns on any of the IT stuff, we're supposed to look for Brad. And he's right over here. He just waved his hand. So thank you for that. Before I turn this over to Chair Loeffler, I'd just like folks to introduce themselves, just where they're from and so forth. And I'm State Representative Paul Marquardt. I represent District 4B, which is all or parts of Clay, Norman, and Becker County. So if we could start with you, Chair Loeffler.
Good morning. I'm Representative Diane Loeffler, and I have the pleasure of representing 15 neighborhoods of northeast and northern southeast Minneapolis. Neighborhoods are like small towns.
Mm-hmm. My name is Dave Lislegard. I am a state representative from 6B, which is the Iron Range, way up north. And it's truly a pleasure to be here to see another part of the state and understand your region and your culture. So thank you.
My name is Jeff Brand. I represent District 19A, so that's a little bit of Mankato, North Mankato, St. Peter, the true capital of Minnesota. So thank you for being here today.
Oh, good morning. I'm State Representative Andrew Carlson from Bloomington, Minnesota, District 50B. Next time you're up shopping at the Mall of America, come on down, say hello, and and do some shopping together. But there's more to Bloomington than just the mall. So by all means, next time you're in town, we can be happy to share our community and the things going on there as well. So, but thank you for the invitation. Glad to be here today and looking forward to doing some listening and learning.
Very good. Ursula?
My name is Ursula
Driscoll.
I'm the community legislator for Assistant.
I'm Nathan Jessen. I'm the committee administrator.
And thank you. If we can go this way and on down.
Jean Wagenius representing South Minneapolis around the airport and Northeast Richfield, which is a suburb of Minneapolis.
Good morning. I'm State Rep. Jerry Hertas. I represent 33A, which is the western one-third of Hennepin County, 11 cities resident to that part of of Hennepin, including Loretto and Corcoran, Greenfield, Independence, Wayzata, Orono, many of the communities around Lake Minnetonka and all the way up north to Hanover.
Chair Davids.
And I am Greg Davids, and I represent Winona's neighbors to the south in Fillmore and Houston counties. And yesterday we were talking about the iron mines of Fillmore County, and so we'll be discussing legislation down the road to have District 28B become part of the IRRRB.
Oh, there'll be a debate.
Representative Draskowski.
Steve Draskowski, Wabasha, Goodhue, and the northern portion of Winona counties. I own a business about two blocks from here, and that's where I parked today.
House research staff.
I'm Jared Swanson. I'm an analyst with the nonprofit
House research staff.
Good morning.
Well, good morning and welcome. It's so great to see so many people who've taken the time to come today. And I want to say a special thank you to those of you who are local government officials, whether elected or appointed. We know you have a really tough job. It's a little bit more challenging in the fall, we know, as you're wrestling with budgets and with setting property tax levies. And we are looking forward today to hearing from you on what you're wrestling with that our tax committee and property tax division can should consider. You know, what's keeping you awake at night as you're looking at the trends that are impacting your community, at the kinds of things that you have to weigh, your worries about your tax base over the future. And I'm delighted to see so many from a city, county, and school districts who have stepped up to inform us, because that's the purpose of today, is for us to listen to you. We do a lot of talking sometimes in our work, but today is really a day to listen and learn from you about what's really happening at the local level. So thank you so much. And we have Jared Swanson from House Research, who's going to do a nice review of what happened in 2019 to bring us all up to date. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Jared Swanson with House Research Department. I'm just going to do a brief overview of some of the property tax and local tax related changes that were in the 2019 tax bill. I'll be working up a handout that has the House Research logo in the upper left-hand corner, and it says 2019 tax bill in the upper right-hand corner.
And if anyone wants copies, the handouts are over the table here. Please help yourself.
So obviously, these aren't all of the property tax-related provisions that were in the bill. I'm just going to highlight a few of the items that were in the property tax, aids and credits, and sales tax articles of the tax bill. So the first item on the list is related to the agricultural homestead classification, and this provision states that property that is owned by one agricultural property that is owned by one business entity but operated by a separate business entity can now qualify for the ag homestead classification as long as one of the members of the operating entity resides on the farm and is actively engaged in farming the land, and more than half of the members of each entity are qualifying relatives. The second item on the list relates to trust property, and under this provision, agricultural properties are now considered to have the same ownership as long as the properties are owned by some combination of the individual owner, that owner's spouse or surviving spouse, or by a trust or trust, the grantor of which is the individual owner or that owner's spouse, as long as the spouse is a surviving spouse or a deceased spouse. The last item in the property tax article is related to the state general levy. The state general property tax levy was changed in this year's tax bill. The overall levy was reduced by $50 million. Of that amount, the commercial industrial portion of the levy was reduced by $47.5 million, and the seasonal recreational portion of the levy was reduced by $2.5 million. There's another item that I was going to cover related to the ag school bond credit, but it looks like one of the testifiers is also going to go a little bit more in depth on that, so I will I'll leave that to the other testifiers. The next section on the handout is, it just contains a few items from the aids and credits article of the tax bill. The The first item on the list relates to local government aid. And this year, the local government aid annual amount was increased by $30 million. So $26 million will be added to the appropriation in 2020. And then an additional $4 million will be added the following year in 2021. This brings the total LGA amount to just under $565 million beginning in 2020. Related to that, the county program aid annual amount was also increased by $30 million. Again, $26 million will be added to 2020, with an additional $4 million being added in 2021. And this will bring the total county program aid amount to just under $265 million annually. Lastly, from the aids and credits article, there was a change to the state aid to school districts, and the second-tier equalizing factor of referendum revenue was increased, and this is projected to lower statewide school property tax levies by just over $9 million. The last item on the list is not property tax related, but it is related to local option sales taxes. And in this year's tax bill, the rules for local sales tax authority were tightened a bit. So there are kind of three main changes that go along with this. The first is that the number of projects that can be funded by a local option sales tax is now limited to no more than five projects. Municipalities are now required to demonstrate the regional nature of a project before being granted the authority to issue a local option sales tax. And finally, the voter approval is now moved until after the legislature grants authority for local option sales taxes, and the voters must approve each project separately. And Madam Chair, that concludes the items on this list.
Great. Thank you so much. We are really blessed to have really smart nonpartisan staff who assist us in all of this work. And next, we're going to move on to testimony. We're going to begin with our city officials and would love to welcome Winona Mayor Mark Peterson. Please. And we are taping this hearing, so please introduce yourself with your name and title before you speak, just so we have it on the record and anyone listening to the audio can recognize the voices.
Well, good morning and welcome. Welcome, okay. Chairman Mark Fart, Chair Kepler, and members of the Tax Committee. My name is Mark Peterson. I'm the mayor of the city of Winona. And my colleague next to me, I'll let her introduce herself.
Thank you for letting us come and speak to you today. I'm Michelle Alexander, a member of the city council.
I have to say it seems a little weird to me Representative Mark Barr sitting in my chair there, but nevertheless, we walk. I'd just like to
feels
share...
pretty cushy.
Better chair.
It's better chair.
Well, as I said last night, welcome to Winona. This is a wonderful opportunity for the people of Winona to host the legislature and to share our story with you and for you to hear our story. I think it is, as it was pointed out last night, the opportunity for you as a nonpartisan a group here over the next few days to get acquainted with yourselves and to also get acquainted with southern Minnesota and southeastern Minnesota. Some of the things that I have some talking points here I'd like to run through this morning, and I know that Councilwoman Alexander does as well. Our property tax revenues are 32.5% is from property tax. Franchise and other fees is 9%, but 50% of our revenue comes from local government aid, which is a very large number, but it's hugely important to our budget and our community. Our local government aid is high, mostly because over 30% of our property is tax-exempt property, and this is something that the auditors bring up every year as a concern. But it's just a fact. That's we have a lot of property. We have very limited property. I guess we call ourselves an island city, but with Winona State University being one of the largest occupiers of the land in our city, they eat up for that, and they're not paying taxes. But We do have a lot of tax-exempt property here, and that's why. Our local government aid is about $8.5 million. We have a great bond rating. We have a double A1 bond rating from Moody's. Our debt per capita is only $589. 100% of our debt will be retired in 11 years, assuming, you know, vanity. Our taxable market value of the city has increased over 9% in the past 2 years, and it's expected to grow another 7% this year. So we're happy about that. The increase in the city's tax base during the past 10 years is 15.3%, with the majority of that growth happening in just the last 5 years. We have solid new construction growth in both the residential and commercial. We had $40 million in 2018, and even more than that this year. And it may possibly double in just the next couple of years. So there's a lot of good projects going on in the city. Our expenditures as a percent of our budget this year, public safety being the largest, our police and fire budget is about 47%. Our general government operations is about 22%. Our highways and streets, 18%. Park maintenance, 10%. And economic development, 2%. Governor Walz was here last spring. We enjoyed hosting him as he was traveling around the state. And we said then that if local government aid was increased, we'd use the majority of those funds for increasing our full-time fire staff, which we did. New firefighters will be hired one a year over the next 3 years. Our fire chief, I think, is in the back of the room if he or you want to hear any additional comments regarding that. Some of the concerns that we have include library funding. Our library is not fully funded. The county falls short just to, they do maintain the minimum, which is $10.96 per capita. Just in comparison to some similar-sized counties with similar-sized cities, Steele, Maurer, Rice, Freeborn are all funding it at $20 to $30 per capita. So we'd like to see that change. Our senior advocacy services are not fully funded from the state through the county as well. We roughly subsidize the county's senior advocacy program. PERA and healthcare are driving up our personnel costs. And as a regional center, Winona residents pay for the built infrastructure which supports visitors, commuters, as well as Winona residents. We continue to look for funding transportation projects in a fair and equitable way to have all who benefit from the investment to assist in paying for it. We believe a local option sales tax is a fair way to fund our aging infrastructure and transportation needs. For transportation projects in particular, and street improvements more specifically. We are a regional center. Over 7,000 people a day commute in and out of the city of Winona to work here. And we have a reason, when we have a reason to act for what we ask for, it will be well thought out and we'll have been judicious in our use of state, and we have been judicious in our use of state funds and the local option sales tax. Winona implemented a local option sales tax in 1998 and ended it 2 years early after dredging the lake, which is something relatively unheard of. And so those are the comments that I wanted to share with you this morning from the city. And I know that Councilwoman Alexander has a few too. So.
Yes, as the mayor said, we are going to be looking at respectfully requesting a local option sales tax, a half-cent sales tax for the city. As you can see when you drove in here, we live in a beautiful city, nestled between the rivers and the bluffs. And we have a population of over 27,000 people. We serve as a regional center for not only southeastern Minnesota, but western Wisconsin. Over 80% of our employment base for the county is inside the city. Over 80% of retail sales for the county are in the city. And we are a hub for the regional center of area recreational activities and offerings, from everything to park and rec, to the senior facility, to the library, to our trail systems. All of that is serving the greater area of southern Minnesota and Wisconsin. We also are proud to be home to Winona State University, St. Mary's University, and Minnesota State College Southeast. However, it presents unique difficulties. Although we love having the institutions and the nonprofits here because they enrich the lives of our community in innumerable ways, it does also mean that we have a very large untaxable property. And so we're always looking for ways to deal with the added residents here and still be equitable with our taxpayers, with our property owners. We are also a regional employer. We have over 20,000 jobs. Major employers include Fastenal, Winona Health, Gunderson Healthcare System, TRW Automotive. I could go on, the list is endless, as well as heavy electronic and composite industries. Our Winona taxpayers, our property owners, built this infrastructure. They continue to maintain the infrastructure for Winona residents, commuters, tourists, truck traffic. And yes, the residents benefit as well. But a sales tax seems like a very fair and equitable way to deal with our failing infrastructure, much of which dates back to 1850 when the city was first founded. We do have some remaining inside our city streets, and every year it's a little bit of a struggle to come in and address those issues. And so with over 30% untaxable, and then adding 35 parks as well as a myriad of park buildings like the Bud King Ice Arena and the Senior Center and the Aquatic Center, all things that we provide for this region, it gets harder and harder to balance our budget back and forth on what is really giving quality of life. And I think most of us would agree health, safety, roads are things you can't put aside, which means some of our other projects and activities get pushed to the side. And I think we're hoping to look at some of our infrastructure needs and our capital improvement plan and not keep shifting them year after year to balance our budget, but to be able to address them in a timely manner so that what is a repair doesn't become a replacement. And that's where we often find ourselves in regional centers like this, is that what could have been repaired for a reasonable amount becomes an unbearable amount of replacement cost. And so we have used this mechanism in the past, as the mayor indicated, in 1998. We made a promise to our public, and it's one that I think we would continue to promise, that if we meet the needs prior to the end of the term, we would sunset that local sales option tax. We did it when we dredged Lake Winona. Ended in 2001, and I think that's something that we're always kind of doing down here. We're very judicious, we're fair, we're practical, we try to be equitable, we try to take into the needs of not only our citizens, but the tourists, the visitors, our short-term residents. That's what I call our college students. Sometimes they're here for 4 years, sometimes they're here for one, but they do add to the load of a city. And so in the hope of keeping some property taxes low, because one of the things I find to be extraordinarily wonderful about Minnesota is we have a high rate of homeownership. Unlike some of our states throughout the union, that is something that is important to me, something I value about the state of Minnesota. But every time you raise the taxes, property taxes, to cover everything that needs to be covered, you're making it just a little bit harder for that first-time home buyer or that economically challenged person to purchase their first home. And in a city like Winona, where the median income is $35,000 to $42,000, even a tiny bit of a bump every year can really dramatically affect their ability to become a homeowner. And it's something that I value, something I think that is unique to Minnesota and is worth supporting. And I know the legislature has supported that with their tax refund for homeowners. It's the tax value credit. And then I just, in closing, I just want to say we have 130 miles of streets, 200 alleys, and 10.5 miles of flood control dikes to maintain and control. And every year, the expenses of those things does not shrink. And it seems like, well, we may bump up our tax rate just a little bit every year. The amount that you have to pay out for these things and employee costs and asphalt costs don't shrink or don't maintain static. And so, and I know from the League of Minnesota Cities, it's proven that $1 in maintenance for a street saves $7 in repair. And it's just kind of the point I'm trying to make, is we want to be able to address these issues now instead of slowly over time waiting until it becomes a catastrophic situation where we have streets sinking, holes appearing because some of that 1850 sewer line cracked or the water line cracked. And so we do budget for our streets. We are pretty committed to that program with our LGA. We, right now, I think we're a little over 800,000 coming up in the next year that we put right back into the streets. But those aren't, those are for planned streets. Sometimes there's a street that's on the docket, but it's, it has a failure prior to that, and then you're scrambling to find a way to repair that. And so I think what we're asking for here is a way to, in a very real timeline, address the needs of not only commuters, the industry that uses our streets and roads, but the residents who, I think, out of everything that we could offer them for a sales tax, the roads are something that every citizen, visitor, to everyone uses the streets and infrastructure. And so that's kind of what we're approaching.
Thank you very much. And since we have so many testifiers, we've decided that we won't, if there are questions or comments, we'll wait till we've heard from all the city officials, and then we'll go to the next group, if you don't mind, because we think some similar themes may come up from others at your local government. Thank you so much for all the information. Next, we have Dan Maticha. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the Goodhue City Administrator.
Mateka,
welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee, and good morning. I am Dan Mateka, the city administrator for the city of Goodhue, and I want to welcome you to the Winona area. I say the Winona area because some of you may not even know where Goodhue is, and but Goodhue and Winona are literally right next door to each other. In fact, tomorrow some of you may return to St. Paul via Highway 61. You will cross the city limit of Winona and immediately be in the city of Goodhue. We've had residents and people here who have lived here a long time say, didn't know, and so forth. So actually, Goodhue is sandwiched between two cities, Winona to the east and Minnesota City to the west. We're a community of nearly 4,200 people that some may say is a bedroom community, but I'd like to say that we are a small city in a unique situation. That situation is that because of our proximity to Winona, who you heard last night from Mayor Peterson is a growing and vibrant city with many exceptional amenities, Goodhue too is growing. As we have grown about 1,000 people in my 13 years with the city. In fact, and some people here will laugh at this, the joke that some of us throw around is that Winona is Goodhue's largest suburb. Obviously, that is just a joke, and I cannot personally say it because I was born and raised here. I was born and raised in Winona, and the city of Goodhue embraces all that Winona has because of its size, and because it means the citizens of Goodhue can take advantage of those amenities such as the library and so forth, and other items that Councilmember Alexander and Mayor Peterson just mentioned. However, that doesn't mean Goodhue doesn't have any needs or issues. We are a city with five parks, a 24/7, 365 police department, a volunteer fire department housing five trucks, and a bunch of city streets that need to be maintained 12 months a year. And I will plug very quickly Small Cities Assistance Aid Fund for cities under 5,000 to help with road maintenance. That would help considerably. We have continued to maintain all of that while at the same time continuing to provide our taxpayers with all the services they have come to expect that has made Goodhue a great place to live and work. How do we do that, you may ask? Unfortunately, the major resource is property taxes. I say that because unlike Winona and many other cities statewide, we don't receive what I would call major dollars in that other source of revenue, local government aid. In 2019, the city will receive about $314,000 in LGA, which is only about 15% of our general fund budget, while property taxes make up the majority at 63%. Because of that unbalanced portion, we have had to make some tough decisions, especially in the recent past as the cost of doing business has increased. We have cut things from prospective budgets, or we have put projects or purchases off to future years or not at all. Or we have used our unreserved fund balance account to balance the budget. In fact, just this year we are using about $220,000 of those reserve funds to do just that. The majority of those funds are going to replace vital pieces of equipment in our fire and public works department. In my 13 years with the city council has made every conscious effort to control property taxes. In fact, if you look at our what our property tax levy was in 2015 and compare it to this year, the city of Goodview has actually only raised taxes 2.9% in that five-year period, which I have to believe puts us in a minority in the state over that five-year period. If we look at that figure even deeper, in 2018, we decreased our levy by a little more than 3%. And this year, we didn't change our levy at all. At the same time, however, over that five-year period, our total market value has increased only 3% on average for those 5 years. To keep taxes down is the council's goal, to make Goodview as affordable as possible for people and businesses to not only stay here, but to come here. But even with those efforts, our taxpayers and prospective taxpayers are saying that is not enough. Unfortunately, these practices of 0% levy increases or using our reserves can't continue. That is why LGA is of major importance to not only our city, but cities statewide. This is a funding source that helps cities such as those you are visiting or have visited on this mini session thrive. In Goodview's case, 15% is not sufficient. Goodview needs help. Cities need your help, because Minnesota depends on growing, thriving, and vibrant communities such as Goodview to continue to be a place where people want to plant their roots. Every Minnesota citizen deserves it. Goodview citizens deserve it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matecha. Matecha? I'm sorry, I'm still working.
Mateka.
Mateka.
You're close.
And next we have the mayor of Red Wing, Sean Dose. Welcome.
Thank you for this opportunity. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the tax committees, really appreciate being here. My name is Sean Dowse, and I'm proud to serve as the mayor of the city of Red Wing, and with me is Marshall Halleck from the city administration. Our city takes great care in crafting budgets that carefully reflect the essential needs of our community and incorporate feedback from our residents to make sure that we can invest in the things that make Red Wing a great place to live, work, and thrive, including good roads, reliable public safety, and a thriving downtown. Over the past couple of years, the most significant fiscal challenges we faced are the rising costs of repairing and replacing critical infrastructure, addressing mandates, providing health care insurance for our employees, and addressing public safety needs. Many cities face these same challenges, but for Red Wing, these are compounded by the fact that around half of our property tax base is attributable to a single entity, the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant. As this committee is aware, power plants are one of the only few types of property in Minnesota that are currently centrally assessed by the Department of Revenue. That means that our local county and city governments play no role in the valuation or assessment of that property. Instead, the plant is valued by a highly qualified team at the Department of Revenue, and those valuations are sent to the county and city and factored into our city's tax base. The result of those valuations has a drastic impact on local budgets. To give you an idea of the scale, sometimes it's best to compare the plant's impact to other property taxpayers in our community, such as a big box store. Red Wing is also home to a Target store, which contributes significantly to our property tax base and could be one of the largest taxpayers in a different community. However, in Red Wing, it would take 131 Target stores to equal the same taxable market value that has Prairie Island Nuclear Plant. Because of this large scale, and because local governments play no part in the valuation process, cities with a tax base that includes significant state assessed property often have to contend with uncertainty and tax base fluctuations that other cities don't. One reason for this is that the state's process is incredibly complex. When the Department of Revenue values the plant in Red Wing, state law requires them first to value Xcel's energy entire system, including property located in other states, such as Wisconsin, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Then they allocate a share of that value to Minnesota. Then a portion of share of that value to each local jurisdiction based on a formula that considers both present day value of the property and its original cost. Very complex. For Red Wing, this means a few things. Fluctuations in Xcel's company-wide valuation ripple across the entire state, meaning our local tax base can rise or fall on Xcel, based on Xcel Energy property located hundreds of miles from Red Wing. Any change in the valuation can have drastic impact on our city budget. When those changes come late in our local budgeting process, we are left with limited options to respond. For example, in 2018, when Xcel and the Department of Revenue reached a final settlement agreement on valuation in mid-September, our preliminary levy had already been set. Our city faced a set of terrible options. We had to choose between letting property taxes rise drastically, laying off city workers or cutting city services, indefinitely delaying much-needed capital projects, or emptying our budget reserves. We decided to use our reserve funds so that local taxpayers would not have to bear the burden of a settlement agreement they had no part in. Those reserves are now depleted, leaving us more vulnerable to future fluctuations in utility valuation. Fluctuations that will delay vital infrastructure projects that our citizens want and need, or result in future property tax increases. In response to these challenges, the Coalition of Utility Cities requested changes to the state's administrative appeal process for state-assessed property last legislative session. These changes would have made the process more transparent and timelier. To be clear, the changes of the state-assessed property tax system cities have requested in recent years are not meant to be a reflection on the accuracy of the valuations that the DOR produces. In fact, we feel that only the Department of Revenue has the necessary resources and the expertise to value these complex systems. And it benefits the local governments when they have the tools and the resources to do so in a timely and accurate manner. Instead, the changes we have sought are intended to protect our taxpayers by making that process more predictable to local policy makers. Finally, on behalf of my city and other plant host communities around the state, I would like to acknowledge that each of our cities is working actively to chart a future that our cities once plants retire. We know that the energy landscape is changing, and large baseload power plants are being retired in favor of wind and solar resources. Our communities don't wish to stand in the way of this vitally important transition, but we need the partnership of the state and the utilities to navigate the changing energy landscape. Under Minnesota law, if the plant were to retire tomorrow, nearly half of our city's tax base would go away in an instant. We will work diligently to prepare for this transition, but nothing can fully prepare a city for a transition this large. We will need your help to avoid drastic consequences to our communities. We thank the committee for its attention to the issues and that face local governments that host utility property, and we hope that you will take a substantive look at this system next session to find changes that we can make this that can make this system more stable, predictable, and equitable for all parties concerned. Our community and our property taxpayers are counting on it. The continued vitality of Red Wing is at stake. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for sharing with us a unique situation that we have wrestled with and will continue to wrestle with you, because it is a major impact on communities like yours.
Yes, thank you for
And are there questions from members on the city testifiers? Otherwise, we'll move on to representatives from the school districts. Representative Hurtas.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I have listened to the conversations from the mayors of Winona and Goodhue and now Red Wing. And you all have expressed the extraordinary value and importance of local government aid to your city governments. A issue that has been of great concern to me as a legislator is that of the 850 plus cities in the state of Minnesota, there are now over 100 cities that are off formula, getting absolutely no local government aid. And I heard from the city manager of Goodhue, Mr. Mataka, that every city in the state values the local government aid. And I guess with regard to a formula that I feel has become quite antiquated, in that a number of cities, and it continues to grow, and there's been a history of cities getting bumped off of LGA, that it's time to fix the formula again to make sure that all citizens, as pointed out by the administrator of Goodhue, are recipients of this important help. So my question to you would be, how do you feel about the fact that other cities also have needs, as have been articulated by all three of you, but get absolutely no local government aid? Would you support all cities getting some local government aid?
Well, what I prefer to do is defer that question.
Sir, would you please state your name?
Oh, I'm
please.
Sorry, Marshall Halleck. This is Thank you. Thank you. I defer the question to Shane Zard, who's here, who also represents us through the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, because I recognize this has been an issue or debate that's been forming over the last year. And I know we've been working with that coalition to come up with a strategy and approach that I think would be best suited to answering your question, if that's all right.
Welcome. Come on up to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, Chair Loeffler.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is, as Marshall said, my name is Shane Zard. I'm with the firm Flaherty and Hood, and we represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And, I was attended when I know Representative Hurtas had a bill that was at least heard by the Property Tax Division this past session. There was one proposal to do this very thing, and I think we appreciated the thoughtful approach that he took to it. You know, as an organization, our commitment has been to an LGA formula that is objective and looks at objective measures of a city's tax base, their need, and ensuring that we have a formula that takes a good look at a city's complete fiscal situation and comes up with a fair number that they should receive in state aid. At times, I think, and sometimes you can do it like clockwork. It's every 10 years or so the formula is due for a refresh, if not a clear look. And as an organization, I think we're open to that conversation, but committed to working, as a coalition with other city groups and coming up with a formula that is best for the state and best for cities, and that is has consensus among those city groups and the city governments that are impacted. So That's maybe a long way of saying that you know, we appreciate the discussion that you've helped start over the past year, and are open to working with other city groups to find consensus on what the future of the LGA formula should be, and can help it continue to work for cities.
Thank you. And is there anyone else from the cities who would like to respond to Representative Hertas's question?
Michelle Alexander back again. I'm actually on the board for the coalition and was a part of the process when they redid it. Was it 4 or 5 years ago now? It mm-hmm. seems like it was more recent, but I think it was a bit of time ago. And one of the representatives from the Twin Cities area asked me if I'm opposed to what I jokingly call Lesser Minnesota, right? Because it's a smaller portion, but we're Greater Minnesota. But the Twin Cities area receiving funding, of course, we have no problem with that. I think the problem comes when you try to set a formula that fits every city into it, because if it's based on need, what are the factors we choose? So I think, to Sean's point, yes, we should always be looking at the formula, we should always be looking at the needs that exist in the cities, but why would I object to any other city benefiting? I'm a Minnesotan as much as I am a Winona, and if there's a need throughout the state, then it should be addressed, and if local government aid is a way to do that, then certainly they should look at the formula again. I think that took quite a large group of Twin Cities representatives, the coalition, the league, everyone was on board with that last adjustment to the way the valuation took place. And I think as cities grow and some of their tax base increases, sometimes they get shifted out of the current formulation. So I think, to his point, that's something that should be talked about again, maybe looked at. I know we get together every fall and summer for conferences as a board, and that's one of the things that they could talk about. And I know it's always an issue for the coalition is LGA, because it's one of the few ways cities in Greater Minnesota, and I know the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul are recipients. It's one of the few ways we're able to balance out the differences in road, fire, police that our tax base couldn't cover. And so cities like Winona could go back to a system where we do sales tax, and we would be fine. We'd be able to cover but that wouldn't help cities like Goodview, which don't have sales tax that would cover their needs. So I think LGA is kind of a brilliant way for the state to help cities. And if your region is struggling, then I think that just means we go back to the table and look at the formula again. But again, it's always based on needs. So there are always going to be cities that are smaller cities, outstate cities that are struggling far more than some of the metro area. For instance, the Mall of America probably is a pretty significant boost to Bloomington, and I'm going to guess that they wouldn't argue about LGA. I could be wrong. I know that in our town, we have one business here that before they even open their doors, they pay $1,000 in property tax. But again, it comes back to that untaxable property, right? 30%. So they're making up the difference that someone that a more balanced base would cover. And so that's where I think cities like Winona are coming from, is how do you look at the whole project and the diversity of the state and come up with a formula that's going to please everyone. And I think they've worked really hard to try to do that, but even all of the cities in the coalition aren't as happy with the outcomes when you change the valuations, because sometimes they were getting more under the old system. I think that that's always going to be a discussion. But that's what I would say on behalf of the board. I mean, I'm not saying that they're all on that same page, but for me at least, I have no problem with other cities benefiting under a program that is as valuable as LGA. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
I have a fun other question for Councilor Alexander, since you're still here. Thank you, Chair Woffler. In your testimony, you talked about the local option sales tax that the city of Winona will be pursuing this coming legislative session. And as you're aware, we've made some changes. So based on those changes and your request that you'll be bringing forward, on the sheet that was handed out, the first one being limiting the number of projects. Yes. And I just quickly noted just a few that you mentioned. Being a former council member myself, the needs are always great, right? And limiting that to just 5 projects, I'm wondering if that's a concern. Just real quick, and you can probably add to this list, but you just talked about maintenance, equipment replacement, healthcare costs, capital projects, infrastructure, facility repairs. The list goes on and on and on. Is there a, and then in addition to some of the other requirements as well, but just focusing on the limitation on the terms of the number of projects, can you describe what process the city might go through in terms of how you would evaluate that or where you would apply those, just in terms of, from a former council member myself, how do you take those new rules and apply them to your request coming forward?
Well, so that was a new conversation that I had with Lucy McMartin, our community development director. We weren't sure if that meant that you could do one street as a project or you could do streets. So part of that discussion about what we would actually bring forward will depend on how that's defined by the body. It will change. If what it's saying is we can do one street, we're not going to come forward and ask for one street unless it's a pretty major street. It does. If that's the case, then that does affect our ability to do what we have hoped to do with the local option sales tax, which we picked a project which is infrastructure and roads because we feel like the largest majority of the population will be happy with that, will be on board with that. When you get into some of the other things for park and rec or trail systems, not the entire population of the city is not a user, is not in favor of that. Often those fail in Winona. Just because if you're opposed to a project, you probably are going to want to pay extra taxes for it. But we looked at something that we think the largest body of visitors, business, and residents would find appealing, which was streets and infrastructure. And part of the infrastructure, part of that is when we go to do the street, we want to be able to rebuild the street, replace the systems underneath when it's open, and really do that full, tear apart. It's a whole different thing when you're just asphalting or just making a repair over a street. So that was why we originally brought that forward, but I don't know how the definition of that is going to follow. If that's the case, then the council will look at a long list of projects, one of them being the fire department doesn't meet federal or state codes for accessibility. It was built so many years ago that we are looking at a project to upgrade and update that facility. We're looking at working with the senior center. I mean, there are projects that we still have on slate, but our intention was to go after this half-cent sales tax, do something for the whole city, and then budget out with our funds for the rest of the projects that maybe touch on a smaller population. We've been partnering quite a bit with local businesses for, like the Bud King Ice Arena, a local nonprofit business person partnered with us to fix that for the students. I mean, we've been working as hard as we can to find as many different options to tackle those public, what I call like the enjoyment of a city, right? Not the need that you have to live, drink, eat, walk, but like the enjoyment of a city, the parks. And so that would have been our goal, is to keep looking for those private-public partnerships. We have an ADA park going in it was supposed to be this year, but it rained too much, so it'll be next year. I mean, that was a local service club raised hundreds of thousands of dollars so that we could partner with them and put in this facility.
We're going to need to move on. Every one of these topics could take a lot of discussion, and we have had a fair amount of discussion on these things, so we can follow up. But we do want to make sure that we hear from the school district, county officials, and the public. So thank you so much for that input.
Madam Chair,
Representative Davids.
She brings up a very good question. Is it a street?
Yes.
Is one of the five, or is it street projects?
I would say that is still being evolved, but the key issue that was agreed to on a bipartisan basis in the conference committee was that there had to be a regional benefit that extended beyond the city residents, and that the local option sales tax was originally designed for and is moving back towards bringing communities together to do something that not one could do on its own, but not to be a substitution for property taxes or local street assessments or those sorts of things. And so it's going back to what has been the more traditional use over time of this as a revenue source, and we know that there's an adjustment in that transition.
And thank you for that, Madam Chair, but they're going to have these in January. Or very, very early in session, so hopefully we can get that cleared up. And I'm not sure how Sarnia Street is of regional significance, but yeah. So I guess we'll figure that out.
every new law has its challenges in implementation. We're all very well aware of that, and we will work with our local officials and with the Department of Revenue as we move forward on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And next we're going to go to remarks from school district representatives, starting with Christy Millering from Winona Schools, the finance director. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and welcome to Winona. My name is Christy Millering. I am the Director of Finance for Winona Area Public Schools. I have actually only been the director for 8 weeks, so this is very new.
Congratulations.
And my background is healthcare and manufacturing, so
healthcare.
Yeah, so I have a school of finance background. And it's kind of a premise, if there seems like some, I'm working on learning things, and it's been a challenging road in the last 8 weeks, and will continue to be a challenge throughout the next couple of years to really understand how our property taxes and community taxes help fund our local school. But again, I'd like to welcome you and thank you to our community. I actually don't live in Winona. I live outside of Winona, but I am in Winona County. My husband works here in Winona. My daughter goes to school here in Winona as well. And there's been many good things that you as legislators have done for our schools. Through the levy process, transferring per pupil amounts from having to be voted on to just local operating revenue that we can just access right away without those votes. And also safe school allocations as well, because that's a huge component of our schools right now with children dealing with social-emotional issues that I think we dealt with when we were children. It just wasn't as prevalent as it is today. And in that process, you know, those items come through on the levy. The levy is not very clear. It's not straightforward. It's not something that you can easily pick up in your first 8 weeks. And I've done a lot of research. I've met with a lot of other directors of finance for other districts throughout Minnesota, and they've been extremely helpful. It is a community of people that you will find nowhere else. I've never actually worked in with an organization where multiple people from across the state work together to solve the same problem. I've always been in competing industries. So it's a welcoming feeling, and to be able to speak with you today is also a welcoming feeling. So just some of the facts regarding the levies in relation to school districts. So from 18 to 19, the state levies actually increased $222 million. 75% of that was voter approved, primarily for referendums. And the odd thing is I remember when I was a kid, the referendums being about a new building, trying to get a new building. Most of the referendums being passed now are just to be able to maintain budget or to do serious repairs on buildings that are aging at this point in time. Winona had this issue as well. We passed a referendum in 2018 for around $9 million, and it was truly to just solidify our schools. It had nothing to do with increasing our budget or to maintain budget. It was to provide a more secure environment for our students by adding vestibules and places where people need to check in, increasing the accessibility for our students and visitors with disabilities as well, because that is a need in our community, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And then also the critical maintenance of our buildings. We've done several roof replacements. Parking lots need to be replaced due to cracks and some issues like that. But then also fire alarm systems, which are pretty important when it comes to having a whole bunch of kiddos in a building. They are number one reason why we are here. As you heard from the city of Winona, you've heard some facts about Winona. I did some research as well just to kind of understand what's going on. In our 2010 census, we had 10,812 city households. They're predicting in 2021 to actually reduce to 10,681. So that's a slight reduction, and that reduction actually impacts our enrollment within the district. The median household income, as was mentioned, was $35,000 to $45,000 at this point in time, which is very low, which causes some problems for some of our children who are unable to afford things for school, like food or supplies. And that is a concern of ours. We want our children to come to school prepared and ready for the day, meaning being well-fed and having all of their needs met. Another issue that we have is we do have that declining enrollment. So over 10 years, we've actually had 681 students transfer out of our district. So it may be that they're going to a charter school, which we have three in the area. They could be going to a non-public school in the area, which we have six. or they could be going to a competing public school in the area. Lewiston is our closest alternative. Winona Public Schools actually covers quite an expanse of land. So we go as far south as Dakota, so we have children coming in from Dakota. We have children who are on the other side of the bluffs here from Winona. We also go as far north as Rolling Stone and maybe even a little bit further than that. So these are places that you may have passed as you've driven along Minnesota's major highways. But we do cover quite a very long, narrow expanse of land, and we need to get those kiddos to our schools safely. But it causes challenge because parents want their kids to get the best education possible. And if they don't feel that the Winona area public schools is appropriate, they will find other options, and there are other options very close. We are continuing to project a decline in enrollment, which is scary. From my position, that is very scary because our enrollment really does drive how much money we get into our district to be able to afford what's going on in our district. And we want to be able to provide the best education possible for the students who attend our district. Additionally, we've had an increase in our special education departments. So just in the last, I want to say it was 5 years, we've had an increase of 5%. Doesn't sound like a lot. However, our high needs has increased by 41%. So that means children who were less needs, they didn't need to have full-time care all day. We have now increased 41% who need full-time care all day long, need to have a one-on-one educational assistant or paraprofessional to support them throughout their day, or a teacher on top of that, which just adds additional expense for our district. Some other items that are going on right now is we're seeing an increase in salaries and benefits, which I think every organization throughout the entire country is seeing that same thing right now. Medical benefits continue to increase. Salary requirements to be able just to live are increasing as well. So we are seeing the salaries and benefits increase. Our buildings are aging, which means more costs. At this point in time, we'd like to keep the buildings that we have today. There's been a really rough patch here in the last couple years with some school closings, which was unfortunate, but necessary because they were unsafe for the children. And again, that's primary care. We want to make sure that those children are safe in our schools and that they're getting the best education. Additionally, learning materials are getting more expensive. Back when we were children, we had textbooks. That's it. You got a set of textbooks, right? Well, now you have a textbook, you have an iPad, you have a Chromebook, you have other technology licenses that you have, because now you have to maintain a subscription, which is an annual renewal. How much is that subscription going to be? And it's not just one, it's 50. So to be able to maintain all of your districts and all of your students' curriculum throughout the day. So those costs are continuing to increase, which is a burden that I think we're kind of behind the times on. We need to really keep track of that technology increase. And there's no way to get ahead of it. It's always changing. And then the last thing is technology infrastructure to secure the data of our students and of our employees. Now, much of the data that we have is public, but there is a significant amount that is still private, and we need to make sure that we prevent a privacy breach within our district. It would be unfair for our children to let that information get released to the public and be held against them at some point in time in their life. And lastly, the items that I've mentioned are very concerning. They're concerning to me as someone who's new to the district. And again, I've only been here 8 weeks, and I'm starting to see these items right away. And I would like to see it get better. How to make it better, that's going to be a work in progress. We, as community members, you as legislators, we will need to work together to solve this problem. It isn't something that will happen overnight. It will take years. This district has had to take significant budget cuts over the last several years, and it's been painful. And who knows what's going to happen this next year. We are just starting to look at the budget process now that the levy's been submitted. And so we want to make sure that we either maintain or try to get ahead here a little bit. But we'll see what's going to happen in the next couple years. And I can't promise anything to my community or to my staff within my district. And at the end of the day, it really is about kids. We want to make sure that they have a safe place to go to school, a safe place to be throughout the day, and the best education possible. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And next we have Fred Norton from the Minnesota Rural Education Association. Oh, Nolan, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Fred Nolan, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association, and I'm fighting a cold for 2 weeks, so bear with me. But we want to thank you and talk about Ag to School, so you can pull out this handout. I won't read it to you, but I'll point out some information that about that. And this has been a multi-year bipartisan effort. Representative Greg Davids, when he was chair, the committee actually passed this twice, in 16 and 17, and Governor Dayton signed it into law in 17 at 40% for all bonded debt that school districts have. And then in 2019, you raised that on a schedule to 70%. So in 2020, it'll be 50% of all existing debt for school bonds. And that's a reduction for homeowners, farmers and timberland owners in 296 districts. The median reduction is 124,000, and those are the districts in gold and in red on the map to the right. The largest state aggregate reduction is in Morris area at nearly 987,000. All the districts in red are receiving over $247,000 in aggregate reduction, nearly $250,000 for school bonded debt. And at this time in the ag community, I think that's very, very welcome. another way to look at it is how much per owner would be the greatest, and that's actually Farmington. Closer to the Twin Cities, high-value ag land, large bonded debt. So while the farmland is not as large a percentage in Morris, per farmer, that's a huge benefit. So we want to say thank you from the school districts and from the ag community for this multi-effort, bipartisan effort over the years. And why is it needed? Well, our schools, as the director of finance from Nona just said, are getting older. Half our buildings were built before 1976. We have a quarter of them that are between 54 and 125 years old. And in greater Minnesota, our buildings are on average 10 years older than the metro. So in the lower left-hand side, you'll see the potential impact, the long-term impact of ag to school. Those districts in red have over 64% of their property in ag value. The ones in gold are over 25%. So you can see there's going to be a significant impact. And many of our districts are going to their voters. And for the most part, school district levies that are increasing are voter approved. Very limited ability for schools to do otherwise. But you can see there's 32 school districts going out for a facility increase in 27%, 28, 27, or 84% are in greater Minnesota. But if you look at the chart at the very bottom, this is not a magic bullet. Even in 2019, the passage rate in greater Minnesota for bonds was 56%, and the metro was 100%. And one of the reasons for that is that in nearly 300 school districts, there's no state share for homeowners. Homeowners are paying 100% of the tax bill for school bonds. That's enough longer conversation, but we want to thank the school and its impact on our farmers and timber owners. If you flip the sheet over, the other impact that was talked about is operating referendums, and that there was an increase in the first tier of the operating referendum that will reduce taxes across the state. The median reduction is $17,000. The largest is Okanagan. They have a fairly hefty operating referendum. They have fairly low property values as far as other districts. And so that's 1.9 million. The districts in red are receiving above the median, above the 17,000. The districts in gold below. The districts in white are either the 111 districts that do not have an operating referendum, or they are districts with their market value for referendums, which is a smaller tax base, seasonal land and ag are excluded, is over $567,000 per people. So they did not benefit from this. So why is it needed? Basically, the formula has not kept up with inflation since 2003. And the formula alone is $660 below inflation. And so districts increasingly have had to go to their voters. There's also local optional revenue, which is very, very needed. But you can see there's a wide disparity here in the chart in the middle. The Twin Cities versus the rural, it's a huge disparity. If you look at the bottom line, there are 39% of the students in greater Minnesota but only 14% of the operating referendum revenue goes to the rural districts. Main reasons for that are the two charts at the bottom. The median income on the left, significantly less than the metro, and also housing prices in the Twin Cities have jumped. I understand the median value is nearly $300,000. I doubt you're going to find very many $300,000 valued homes in Winona. And you can see that difference. So the second reason why you get lower passage rates for bonds and referendums in Minnesota is the lower median income. You're asking people with less income to pay higher taxes. So again, we want to thank you for your attention to these efforts at the legislature. We look forward to working with you in the future on these.
Well, thank you, Mr. Nolan. And I understand that Representative Davis would like to ask a question.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I would publicly like to thank Mr. Nolan for his help on that bill, the 2017 tax bill. This goes back to the late 1990s, early 2000s, when Senator Kenrick Scavel and I at the time presented two bills. One was for excess levy overrides for the operating, and then one was for buildings. We got the excess levy override passed, but not the building. I'd been working on it for quite some time. But I think we need to recognize two legislators that are at this table. I always want to say this, Chairman Drazkowski to my left, and Chair Marquardt, because as I was chairing the tax committee, these two chairs, or current Chair Marquardt and Chair Drazkowski, really did the heavy lifting on the issue on the ag to school or on the bond referendum. So, and the whole theory was that we would go into many school districts and there'd become a war, if you will, between farmers and folks in town. Well, then the farmers, it was said that they were not for education, but they were for education, but they were paying, what, 10 times as much or whatever the number, about 10 times as much. And that, so what this has done is it's brought some fairness in, and what was done in the last tax bill, thank you to Chair Marquardt and Chair Drazkowski, was moving that number from 40%, because that's about all we had money for at that point, in raising that up. So thank you for your help on that. Chair Drazkowski, Chair Marquardt, thank you very much for your work on a very, very important issue.
Yes, I echo that. This work began in 2014, and so Representative Drazkowski held many, many meetings on it, and thank you for every effort in this.
Now, during the election, of course, Madam Chair, I take full credit for all of it.
Well, thank you so much to the school officials for presenting, and we still have a full agenda of testifiers, and at this point, Chair Marquardt's going to run the remainder of the meeting.
Very good. Thank you very much, Chair Loeffler, and thank you, Chair David, for those comments, and Representative Drazkowski, like you said, had a lot of work to do on that, and it's not just a fairness issue for agricultural land and farmers, but it's also an equity issue for rural students, because you know rural students should have just the same amount of opportunity to have a world-class facility as someone anywhere else in the state. And the fact that, as Chair Davids mentioned, there's this real sense of unfairness in how farmers are treated is hurting a lot of these referendums in rural Minnesota, and hopefully this will help level the playing field a little bit and doesn't create total fairness, but it goes a long, long way. So it's been good. I know in my neck of the woods, Barnesville had a bond referendum in August, and they had failed two before, and they did pass this one. And I know the Ag to School credit was really instrumental in making that happen. So thank you. We have until about 11 o'clock, probably. We can go a little bit more than that. I know we have eight testifiers for sure, and then there might be some others. And I want to leave at least about 10 minutes for some closing comments. So we'll probably, dividing time, about 3 minutes or so for each testifier, and then we can leave some questions after each area. But this has been great discussion and great points being brought up that are going to be kind of the framework for when we go back next session. So with that, we will start with the county commissioner, Commissioner Ward. would be first, and welcome.
Thank you very much. You hit home. You talked about farmers. I'm Marcia Ward, Winona County, 5th District, and I represent the southeast part of Winona County, which is heavy agriculture. And my family has always been engaged in agriculture, great-grandpas, grandpas, and even myself. I own ag land. So being fair with the farmers is very near and dear to me. And I noticed when you introduced yourselves, nobody really said they were a farmer, and I know I'm in a minority. Being fair, of course, you just said the counties will get the short end of a sharp stick here. We only get 2 minutes when the city's got their 3 minutes. Okay. And I have, of course, I have 2 hours of talking notes, but we'll summarize that. Thank you very much. One of the best things that came out of one of the last two sessions was our increase for county program aid. But I have to counteract my city parts in that county program aid in a county budget only contributes a very small portion of our budget. And we do appreciate the legislature and the Association of Minnesota Counties work very hard to maintain that, although government doesn't seem to recognize inflation and the cost of living and those types of things. So the goal of that whole program was to make nobody a loser. And so as far as Winona County was affected, we kind of stayed the same. We didn't make any great gains, but we didn't lose money, which is also important. We talked about roads. Last night I got read the riot act because I don't have a road finished in my district and it's causing a lot of problems. Of course, all this rain and everything isn't helping. But I said, if you want to hang me from that dead tree in your front yard, I'll bring the rope. Roads are very critical to the rural infrastructure of Winona County. But one area that Winona County government has to deal with is the human service function of county government. And it's one of the biggest drivers of our budget. It is, out of a 50-plus million budget, it is about a third of our budget. Of our approximately 300 employees, it's about 100 of our employees that are either social workers or support staff to provide these state-mandated programs. We don't have a choice. We have to do them. Now, nobody's going to argue that we don't want to take care of the elderly, the children, the people who can't take care of themselves. Of course, that's very important. But in a county budget, I've been commissioner for 17 years, and it's an area to try and wrap your head around. And county commissioners are generalists. State legislators, you're generalists. So you have to depend on your committee people and your advisors to, tell you, what's going on in each area. You can't possibly know all the areas of government. But one of the issues with human services, we can't control it. We don't set the rules, the regulations, or the guidelines to take care of these programs. For instance, one of the biggest things that hit us hard was former Governor Dayton and his child task force. A child died, tragic for the state of Minnesota, under foster care. Of course, we all need to react. He created a task force. They came up with 93 recommendations. Now, from my perspective, they were important, but luckily you didn't put 93 new rules and regulations on our plate as counties, but some were adopted. It skyrocketed investigations of child abuse, which should be always, reviewed and investigated, but it also skyrocketed our out-of-home placement. The state and the federal government does not pay for out-of-home placement. That is all on the county property tax rolls. How do my cornfields, bean fields, dairy cows, pigs, chickens, how do they pay for those property taxes? When they had no effect on why these children were, put in out-of-home placement, but yet they have to pay. And we all know property taxes aren't discretionary income. We all pay property taxes. If you rent, you pay property taxes. If you own, you pay property taxes. And what strikes near and dear most recently is my agriculture community is losing money. They are not making money. But property taxes aren't optional. Somehow you got to pay them, or your name goes in the paper saying you're delinquent. But you have to pay them. Somebody will pay them. And I guess, it's the beauty of the tax. We know exactly if we raise it X number of percent, we'll get X number of dollars. It's control. But so many of county expenses in that third of our budget, and it's growing, and a third of our employees, it's growing. And you know, employees want a pay raise. They want health insurance, which they need and they deserve. So it just keeps driving our budget up and up. And so many times people think, well, they set their levy at 3%, 4% or something. That's an increase. That's just always an increase. So we're building this base, and we're always increasing it. Mm-hmm. Now, I do give the city a good view, if you know where it is, you know, credit for not raising that. But just the things that we're mandated to do, how much do we cut? Now, our board is divided on what we should and shouldn't do. What are our core functions? Where should we be spending our money? But it's very difficult when you're mandated things to do. And another issue I have, too, and one of my 3 minutes, I could talk forever. Don't get caught up in the verbiage of government and saying cost savings. I know staff and researchers and such like to tell you that you saved all this money. Was it really a savings, or was it just a cost shift? Yes, maybe the state of Minnesota saved, and you got surpluses, and you feel good about that, and we all should. But did the cost just get shifted to the counties? Our proportion of programs is constantly shifting. Sex offenders, oh, love sex offenders, you know? We used to pay 10% of somebody being put away because of a sex offender. Now the county pays 25% of whatever it costs, and it costs a lot of money. Why am I paying 25%? I didn't write any rules or laws that made that person a sex offender, but yet I got to pay 25% more. Medical assistance. Sometimes it's not necessarily a true cost shift, but it's a workload shift. The system required many more investigations as to who is eligible. And then the state asked us to verify incomes and make sure they're still eligible. We have this great system, it's called METS, and we love all these little acronyms, METS. It was a technology system to help us do our paperwork. There's a lot of paperwork in human services. And so a lot of those support staff, they're not helping the people, they're doing the paperwork. And we need accountability, don't get me wrong, there needs to be accountability. You folks are dealing with the State Department of Human Services, and we need accountability there. But the workload continues, and people cost money. As I said, 100 people in the Human Service Department, we all want a 3-4% pay increase. We were very lucky this year. Our health insurance, we got a negative increase. Unheard of. Wait for next year.
That's because of reinsurance.
Negative increase.
It can jump up, you know, like crazy. You know, it just depends. Have one or two cancer cases or one or two heart transplants or something like that. We don't know where Bernie's insurance is, but, you know, he just had heart surgery, so his insurance will go up. But we were lucky, you know, in that fact. Otherwise, our levy would go up more. The thing that I ask you to do is when somebody comes and wants a change in the rules, the statute of the program, is to really ask, is this a cost saving? Is it a cost shift? Who's going to do the work? Where's the workload hitting? Counties are your boots on the ground. We really are. And I think I'm not a military, but I think somebody probably is a military. Isn't there a saying, if you don't take care of your feet and boots in the Army, your Army will fail? You've got to take care of the boots on the ground. We're being asked to do more and more in an area that we have absolutely no control. And we are asking people who are losing money, fighting for their livelihood, to take care of their children, to send them to school, to come to town, to, you know, to go to the parks and go to the restaurants and everything. And it's gonna come to an end someday. And God forbid you all go hungry someday because the farmers aren't there to feed you. But anyway. So we are your boots on the ground. Take care of us and ask those tough questions. Don't get hung up in the verbiage. Surplus or cost savings or, you know, what really is it? Because really, is it a cost saving? I mean, have you seen a human service department shrink or not do something? No, we just keep adding to the plate. Not that it's bad stuff, but we can't just keep adding at the expense of the property taxpayer. You know, what really irks me is I own property in a couple counties. I'm fortunate, but I don't even get to vote in those counties where I don't live, but they raise my taxes. Sure, I can call the local representatives and, you know, voice my concerns, but I don't get to vote, so I don't know if we should change that or not.
Commissioner, Board, if you could
wrap it up.
Yeah, this is excellent, excellent. But we just need to get through other testifiers. No, this
has
been
great.
But
thank you again. I appreciate we can do teamwork. The county program aid was a great example of being able to do teamwork and figure something out. We can do it again with the help. AMC, I will put in a plug for Association of Minnesota Counties. They are forming a work group to seriously look at these tax, these mandates, because unfortunately we don't have research staff as readily available. It takes time to figure it all out, and we will be figuring it out. But remember, and I always say, you're lucky it's probably cloudy. It's a great day to live in Winona County. I've always had that theme. And if I can't say that to my constituent that calls me up ragging on my road project that I didn't get finished, it is a sad day. So we have to all continue to work to say it's a great day wherever you live. For me, it's a great day to live in Winona County. And thank you again for coming and listening. And we can have more conversation at some future time.
Commissioner Ward, thank you so much.
Thank
appreciate
you.
That. Commissioner Arneson.
I think I just got a promotion. Scott Arneson, Goodhue County.
Oh, administrator. There you go.
So thank you for having this committee. I am actually going to have fairly brief remarks because we have a content expert, LaVon Augustine, our county assessor, with us. I do want to make one comment on Marcia's testimony. A year ago, I was able to give our representative, Draskowski, one of the slides out of my 2018 budget presentation proposed. And in that, while we were sitting here, I had my staff send it to me. Almost 100% of our increase was due to state rules or law changes. And it was in child protection, out-of-home placement, state hospital placements, chemical dependency treatment, mental health, and the work surrounding MA. Mm-hmm. So just to echo what Marcia said. And I want to have one comment also on the next topic, which is dark store theory. Last year we had one court case settlement on that, and I believe it was on a Monday, and that same entity filed their next appeal. It was a Wednesday or Thursday. Mm-hmm. So that issue that Olmsted County is going to talk to you about, anybody that has big box stores throughout the state has that issue, so mm-hmm. it's big. The topic we want to talk to you about is, and when the city of Red Wing talked about it, is state assessed valuations with largely utilities. And I want to say Xcel Energy is a community partner of ours, so anything I'm going to say here is nothing that I haven't already talked with them about. But Xcel Energy will tell you that they're spread across the United States. There's only one state that they appeal in, that's Minnesota, and they appeal every year. It's their standard MO they're going to appeal. And when LaVon's going to show you how this happens, but when you think about it, it happens when the appeal process collides with our budget process. We have to send out our valuation, our estimated tax statements in October, and at that time, if the appeal process from your utilities is not done, we are sending out misinformation. And that process used to be called truth and taxation. And if we know that Xcel Energy has appealed their valuation and it is not settled, and we're sending that out to 30,000 taxpayers, we are not being truthful. And we know that. But it's the law, we have to do that. Mm-hmm. So that is the crux of it, as she explains how this happens. But it's the collision of the appeal process on the state valuation and the city and county and state budget processes. Thank you.
Very good. Welcome. If you state your name, please.
LaVon Augustine. I'm Goodhue County Assessor. So the Department of Revenue works with very complicated timelines and laws. We know it's good. They do a really nice job. I do have a PowerPoint tonight. We can have a copy. They work with the utilities, pipelines, railroads, receiving in their information. And I'll just go through this. And here's just a couple quick snapshots of what we have going on in our county. We have Northern States Power Company, known as Xcel, and a steam plant, and a nuclear power plant. So we do have a very vested interest in the policies and procedures and things that the Department of Revenue does have to abide by. Obviously, we have good-sized railroads. You know that there's a whole lot of laws that they have to go by. So when this is their timeline, they basically just kind of very, very briefly put, it all starts pretty early in the year. By the time July comes around, they have the notices of value sent out to the companies can appeal. They have 20 days, then they can reappeal now under the new process. That puts it into part of our timeline of the yellow area there on this timeline actually is our administration. And they basically start their budget process very, very early in the year. They have their meetings and trying to figure out what the budget's going to be. And of course, some of the other colors are the auditor, treasurer, and the assessor end of it. And so, very, very busy time. This is real brief. Here's where it kind of pulls together. So in Goodhue County, we ended up having, as Mayor Dozy indicated from the city of Red Wing, kind of a shocker last year. We had a $71 million decrease in their value, and that affected our taxpayers. They felt that huge reduction. I don't think you can really see this very well, but I gave three examples. One is about a $100,000 home, another one is about a $200,000 home, and the third is almost a $400,000 home. All of them received a 24% increase in taxes from Goodhue County alone. Red Wing did keep theirs down because they dipped into their reserves. We did increase their values in this town about 18%, and they did see a huge school referendum value jump in. So talk about truth in taxation statements. The referendum is never in that, and then our large increase, I believe, made it in there, but it was by very, very brief that it barely made it in there because that timeline is so tight. So we're kind of looking for some options maybe to think about what we can do to make this a better process so our taxpayers are not feeling that pain that they felt last year, or actually this year. I don't know if, you know, in the future that we can look at maybe shortening those appeal times. I don't know if maybe having an effect, take effect for the next year, the taxes versus immediately. And then we've also had the Tax Advisory Committee mention to at least our auditor treasurer coming back and saying that maybe doing away with truth in taxation statements, since they're not really true any longer, because we're missing a few huge timelines in there. So, do you have anything else to add to that?
No, like I said earlier, this happens because the two things collide in mid-October, and sometimes if the appeal's done, you're able to just barely get that information in there. Other times you're not, but it's really not fair to the taxpayers. And we don't, like I've said this to Excel too, when somebody calls in and says, why did my taxes go up in between the statement you sent me and when I got the real tax statement, I don't like sitting there and saying, well, it's because Excel appealed their value. It's not fair to Excel.
Right.
I mean, they have the right to do that, and they do it every year. And we know when we send those out, if it's an appeal year, that and it's not resolved, that what we sent out to the taxpayers is not accurate.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a very important subject, very concerning. You know, do the counties and cities really want to value nuclear power plants, first of all? If you do, wouldn't you still have the same problems because you may have to value it less, and then that, well, of course you wouldn't value it less, but so, and this goes into a little, not so much for southern Minnesota, but northern Minnesota, the pipeline valuations,
mm-hmm.
how they've been appealed, and we're losing. The state is losing and losing and losing on those. So this is a very current topic, and it's one that I hope we can continue to talk about, because you know, you have $1 million up or down this way or that way, and it really hits you. And I have just been thinking that, do we get it done earlier? I'm going to be looking at the recommendations you have in your presentation here, because we're not in a good situation here.
I'll just respond to that quickly.
Yes,
Mr. Anderson. We don't want to evaluate them, nor would we want to expect them. We don't have that expertise. But I just want to reiterate, they're spread across the United States. There's one state where they appeal every year, and we're sitting in it. So other people have somehow figured out how to do this and not have appeals every year.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think Mr. Arneson hit it on the head. Members, we have dealt with this somewhat at the legislature. I think collectively our head's in the sand on this. Our Department of Revenue is inept in doing these evaluations. When you look at other states, some of us don't want to admit that, but here's where the rubber hits the road. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I know we do have someone from the Department of Revenue. I won't get into that. And I don't know if that opinion is held by everyone here at the committee, Representative Druskowski, just for the record, but it is a very complex system, as we heard. And, every business has a right to appeal it. And I do think it's important somehow we get some consistency to this. So, and even look at maybe what other states are doing if it makes this work. But, I mean, the bottom line is we've got to try to correct where there's this big difference at some point. But I think it's complicated. And it's just, I don't know if anyone's necessarily to blame. It's just kind of the system has to be somehow made more transparent, as mentioned earlier, and somehow more consistency there so you can get to your taxpayers and give them a real truth in taxation statement. So, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you've touched on something that has always been of concern to me, is that all of our livelihood and the vibrance of each community is, and being a community, is having a business district. Without a downtown, you don't have a town. And we have increasingly over the many decades and through our complex property tax system put an undue burden in terms of how much property taxes are paid by who. Yet we're all at the trough together enjoying the community. And so by our property tax rates, businesses have a much heavier burden than do residences. And yet most of us earn our living working for businesses. And the sanctity in which we should be encouraging and promoting private sector businesses and communities is important to the health and vibrance of every town in the state of Minnesota. So I think it's challenging to, have an effective class rate that puts an undue burden on businesses, and I think we've got some slides coming up about all these empty box stores, is certainly something that needs to be addressed, and it just really gets down to a question of who pays for what. And so it's a system that's been complicated. I've been starting my eighth year on the Property Tax Committee with Chair Marquardt, and he's been on it longer than I. But it's near and dear to my heart to make sure that we have healthy and vibrant communities. And one of my great agitations since I came to the legislature has been the temporary tax called the state general levy, which no longer became temporary. And when you extract those dollars out of your downtown Winona or downtown Goodview or Red Wing, wherever it is, and you take those dollars out of the community and you redistribute it all across the state, it's not doing much for those local businesses and communities to grow their business, and it's an inhibitor to growing their business and offering, more for the people that work there. So the state assessed valuation of these big projects, which, they're a system. They just don't live where the plant happens to be, but there's distribution lines, distribution systems, it's all across the region, and take any part of it out of the equation and it's no longer a system. So we heard about the valuation of the entire system and an allocation of who gets served by what and how these valuations are there. But it certainly is a challenge, and thank you for your testimony.
So thank you very much. We'll hear from Olmsted County, Mr. Renicky and Ms. Hackman.
Actually, we're going to do this a little
bit. Okay. That's good. So I'll let you introduce yourself, whoever wants to start. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, distinguished members of the committee, good morning. My name is Tom Reinecke. I'm the commercial appraisal supervisor at Olmsted County, Rochester, Minnesota. I've been here to talk about the big box retail dark store theory. So realizing I'm short on time and to get the most bang for my buck, I put a PowerPoint presentation together, and I'd like to go through that with you now.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman, do we have that?
Representative David, I don't. I have something. It's this one, dark store theory. If not, or there's okay. I think staff will be passing those around.
Dark store. Okay. Dark store theory.
It's the.
I've got. Sounds like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Dark Vader.
Yeah. Dark Vader.
Okay, basic background is the dark store theory states that an occupied, functioning, big box retail store cannot be valued based on its current use, but it has to be valued based on hypothetical vacant use. So that's where the problem begins. For example, this existing, functioning, first generation Walmart store built for this Walmart, what would be the comparable properties you would look at to value this store? Proponents of the dark store theory say you're to use vacant, blighted stores to value this property. Comparable for a well-functioning first generation? I don't think so. Would this be a comparable? I don't think so. We say that the comps to be used for a first generation, highly functioning retail big box store are other highly functioning big box retail stores. The second generation, when it's no longer viable by changing demographics, changing composition, growth patterns in the city, some of the big box stores get changed to what they call a second generation or possibly lower use. The one in the top left corner was a church. And then we've got an Ames, a lower quality department store that got some of the space in this other retail store. There's functional obsolescence in this second generation because they're not using all the space. And then there's a library that was put into one of the other big box retail. I put this together just so if maybe this winter when you're thinking about ice fishing, it might bring big box back to mind. But if you look at all these ice houses, they're retail properties in great locations. They're fishing for dollars, retail dollars. Okay? So then I've got the ice house that's located to the rear of the lake on thin ice. That would be a lesser quality neighborhood, undesirable location, because if it was desirable, you'd have a lot more houses over there. And then to add a little bit more to this fact, this particular ice house has some restrictions placed on it. You can only spearfish out of that house. Okay, so that's representative of some of the deed restrictions that are put on these second generation stores that Walmart or that the big box theorists contend are representative of the market value for the houses that are closest to us here that are over the retail dollars and considered first generation properties. The big key that us assessors follow is we do a thorough highest and best use analysis, which basically says we look at what's the most legally permissible, physically possible, financially feasible value and use of this property that results in the highest value. That's what we're charged with. Judge Turner, as recently as 2017, tried one of the case, and I've got a quote up here on the screen from her. She says, to qualify as comparables, the highest and best use of the property should be very similar, if not equal to the highest and best use of the subject property. That was pretty enlightening. So we're kind of backing up, saying one of the best practices that the assessor should follow is to consider the current use of a first generation, well functioning, big box retail store in the highest and best use analysis, because it keeps the highest and best use analysis determination based on something that's realistic and, you know, exists in reality, as opposed to the conjecture of other hypothetical potential second generation uses that the dark store proponents argue for. The appraisers, we typically follow three approaches to value: cost, income, and sales. Proponents argue adamantly that two of the three approaches are usually not applicable to valuing big box retail stores. Cost approach, for example, they say, well, we paid more for the land and we built this big building and spent $11 million, and when it's done, it already suffers from functional obsolescence because it's only got value to us. It would lose value to another user. And on the income side, they're claiming that a build-to-suit generates a leased fee income, and they're claiming leased fee is not equal to fee simple, when that's a whole bunch of hogwash, because fee simple subject to a lease, they're basically the same thing. And on the sales approach side, once again, they're going back to the hypothetical buyer and arguing that the comparable sales use should be the second generation, lesser valued properties to get the property tax bill reduced.
Yeah, it's, I'm Stephen Hack, and I'm county assessor here in Winona County, and I've been doing this for 41 years, so once in a while I have a little experience. On big boxes, we have them. We're in litigation with all of them all of the time. The Star Trib just had an article this week where Walmart didn't get what they wanted from us, so they went out and filed in district court a civil suit against us, trying to circumvent all the laws that are existingly on file, trying with tax court. The district court has thrown it out of Winona County. So, you know, that one, that's where that's at right now. So, for us, it's what we do.
So, if I can stop you just for a second. So, like this Walmart situation, are they, when they go to get lower valuation, right now, are they using the dark store theory, or is it just general, we're being assessed too high? Or are they using the dark store theory right now?
Absolutely. Okay. They hired, the last appraisal we had gotten from Walmart was done by an appraiser out of the Twin Cities, and I will tell you, every comparable he had listed does not look like our Walmart store. And, you know, our big boxes in this community generally are a little bit newer. We've had a few older ones. The Kmart building, which it was closed, is now being converted into a Gunderson Health clinic, 83,000 square foot clinic, $20 million permit on it. Yet that even sold for, you know, nearly $4 million, and the roof was falling in on it. So, you know, our market's going to be different, but it's the constant fight. And I think for counties, our constant fight is in money that we're spending that's really expensive. You know, even if we, like on the other one, it's difficult for us to fight them. Their attorneys are working on contingencies. We're paying ours by the hour. It's expensive for us to stand up, but if we don't, then we don't know where it ends.
Chairman Marquardt, yeah, go ahead.
This is a national problem, and some of the states are looking into legislation to ease the flow of tax dollars back to the taxpayer.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Hack and Mr. Reinke. Reinecke. Have you thought about designing a bill that we could pass in Minnesota to nip this thing in the bud? I've heard about this in the past, and I think it's just unconscionable when you take a brand new Target, Walmart, Costco, whatever, and you want to value it on Kmart South in Rochester. That doesn't work for me. Can you come up with, maybe offline, I'd like to talk to you and get something put together, and if you want to pass, I'd give it to Mark, or if you want to, well, whatever. but I don't know if any, I can't speak for everyone at this table, but I would think that this is a waste of money that the counties are having to spend, the assessor's office, on something that makes no sense. So maybe we can talk offline.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to just, any other, thank you. Is there any other questions of clarification? Otherwise, I think, you know, this is great. This is why we're here today, is to hear these things that, again, is going to formulate a lot of what we do this session. So any last comments?
Well, Chair, could I just spend a second just discussing just the overall complexity of our system in Minnesota? I mean,
How can you do that?
Credits, exclusions, 55 to 60 classifications. We have more special programs than we know what to do with. We'd like to see it easier for our taxpayers to understand what we're doing so we can be more transparent.
So move.
Mr. Chairman, yes. just don't get rid of 4C.
I understand. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. I think, so that, anyone else from the county? All right. I'm going to move to, we have Mr. Papenfuss and Christy Ransom on the list. And then anyone after that is certainly welcome. Okay.
Good morning. Welcome to Winona. My name is Jerry Papenfuss. I live in Winona. Over the last 57 years, my wife and I have owned and operated radio stations in five Minnesota communities, Winona, Fergus Falls, Perm, Blue Earth, and Windham. So I believe I have a pretty good understanding of how outstate Minnesota works. We work with hundreds of small businesses, and I understand the tax burdens and the regulation burdens that are placed on these small businesses by Minnesota's tax laws and regulations. At this time, I'm a volunteer fundraiser for Minnesota State Southeast Technical College, raising money for new equipment for advanced manufacturing and robotic laboratories. Winona has over 75 manufacturing companies. These companies compete worldwide. Minnesota's taxes and regulations make it very challenging for them to compete. These are great companies. You'd be amazed at how efficient they are. They provide good paying jobs. The working conditions are very good. Technology is used to decrease the amount of lifting that workers have to do. And many other technologies are used to make a safe and clean working environment. There's little incentive for these companies to expand in Minnesota. Most of these companies have manufacturing facilities in other states. When there's a downturn, they tend to downsize Minnesota first. I would encourage each of you to adapt a manufacturing business in your district. Get to know some of the staff, the line workers. Take a tour of the plant. Find out their challenges. Manufacturing, mining, and agriculture are the backbone of our state. They need less tax and less regulation. As you know, the Minnesota business taxes are high. We appreciate the reductions made in 2017 and 2019, and we just ask you to look for more ways to reduce the tax and regulation burden on Minnesota businesses. I encourage you to make government more lean, make sure all state governments are using technology, resist the call for more spending, and push the governor to get rid of useless regulations. And if I could just follow up on what Commissioner Ward said, this regulation thing is so dysfunctional and so costly, not only to businesses, but to government, as Commissioner Ward pointed out. And I'm very disappointed that the last two governors did very little to curb regulations. And I would look to the legislature to do a better job of looking at these regulations that we have and seeing if we can't get rid of some of them. We should be able to cut down on these regulations. And I ask you to take a look at that. And thank you.
Mr. Papenfuss, thank you very much for your testimony. Please state your name.
Good morning. I'm Christy Ransom. I am the president and CEO of the Winona Area Chamber, and I think I'm the newest to Winona with only 2 weeks on the job, only from Representative Baker's district in Wilmer, Minnesota. So thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and the rest of the committee for allowing us the time to talk. I won't take much of your time, and obviously because I'm with the Chamber of Commerce, I'm going to address tax as it relates to our business climate in Minnesota. And so first of all, I want to thank you for your work in 2017 and this year as well to reduce the property tax levies. But there's still more work to do to make Minnesota a friendly business climate as taxes are concerned. Minnesota ranks among the 10 worst states for business tax climate. And the current market is so characterized by mobile capital and labor, with businesses large and small locating in areas where they have the greatest leverage for a competitive advantage. So states with the best tax systems obviously are the most competitive in attracting new business and in gaining economic growth and in attracting employees as well. Business taxes affect business decisions, as Mr. Pappenfuss said. When businesses have locations in multiple states, when the expansions are happening, or when they're looking at relocating a corporate office or growing a labor force, they're looking at doing that in other locations in other states. As a border community, it's imperative that we remain in a competitive position with our neighbors. Likewise, with the large manufacturing presence that we have here that's global in Winona, we need to be very competitive with worldwide. These companies have a worldwide base that they're dealing with. With a high corporate rate, tax rate in Minnesota and non-conformity with the federal system entirely, we create a climate that's really not very business friendly. Minnesota is such an amazing state to live, work, and play. I have been here my entire life, and I just ask you to address some of those issues so that we can continue to retain and attract businesses to Minnesota, and in likewise attract more Minnesotans to live, work, and play here as well. Thank you.
Ms. Ransom, thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else that would like to testify? Very good. Good morning. Welcome. If you would state your name for the committee.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay? My name is Linda Soderstrom. I live in the village of St. Charles. And I'm not sure I'm in the exactly right committee, but the thing that keeps me awake at night and that I worry about the most is that with property taxes going up, that rent would rise, in which case I would be displaced again for the third or fourth time in 3 or 4 years. So I just had been displaced from Richfield at the crossroads at Penn, then from Normandale Lake Estates in the Bloomington area. I've worked and volunteered on all kinds of housing ordinances, been to 300 meetings in the last 3 years. But I do think that when properties are flipped, I witnessed 2,350 people at Crossroads and another 100 in Bloomington to lose their homes, some with 30 days notice to quit. And we need to, and I do thank you for everything Homes for All has brought to you by Coalition. And when you're all working together again in the next session, I hope you'll continue to support housing. I don't want to be the canary in the coal mine of deeply affordable housing. And I think that I'm very, very concerned because I had to move down here for affordability. The differences between the Twin Cities, the metro, the collar counties, and Southeast, and I would assume outstate in general, is that my Section 8 voucher is not stigmatized. My Section 8 voucher, which I'm reliant upon for the remainder of my life, is available. It is welcomed, needed, and wanted. And I was placed generously. My home is now is safe, stable, sustainable, and sanitary. And that's actually in the contract. So with that, I just wanted to let you know that that is a worry for you, the little people. When we have income-based rental properties, we need to be included in all the planning so that we can be at the table with you and help solve these problems and people aren't put under duress. And so the workforce has housing as well and children remain stable. Thank you so very much for letting me talk.
Ms. Soderstrom, thank you for bringing this forward. So, anyone else would care to testify? Thank you much. Members, any kind of closing comments? Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Linda, it's good to see you. Thank you for your advocacy. If you have some time, hearing Linda's story, it's quite the... she's been through a lot. So thank you for taking the time to be here today and briefly testifying. But her story is one I wouldn't wish on anybody. With the housing situation that she's had to deal with over just a short period of time with three locations is something that Minnesotans should not have to deal with. So thank you for your advocacy. Thank you all for being here today. It's been a wonderful experience. I have pages of notes. So there's a lot of ideas here that I hope to carry forward into the coming session.
Mm-hmm. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just say that I heard mining twice, which was unique, and because I think the region that I come from and the region that around here, there's a lot of similarities and there's a lot of same challenges. And I think it's important that we're here to listen and learn, see it, feel it, touch it, to be able to understand it. And that's what I'm taking away from this experience, and I want to thank the chairs for allowing this opportunity, and Speaker Horton, but thank you for coming here and telling your stories, because I never heard them before, and there are some that is going to help educate me to make better informed decisions down in St. Paul. So without your voice sharing it with us, you know, those decisions aren't always correct. So thank you.
Chair Loeffler.
And I just want to thank you all for coming and to say part of the purpose of the mini session and coming out to this area was so that you'd see we are approachable and we're willing to listen and learn. And, you know, we run for office, as you do, to be problem solvers. But we can't solve problems we don't know about. We don't know what the real impact is or don't have your insights into what will work or won't work as we start to brainstorm solutions. And so I hope that the legacy of the mini session is not just you had your say today, but that you will continue to stay in dialogue with those of us who have a pretty heavy workload on our shoulders, and but want to know what's really happening out in the real world in our local governments throughout the state, because your insights make us better decision makers. So please stay in touch. We all are accessible by email, by phone. We like to hear from you.
And I want to say thank you to everyone. Thank you again to Mayor Peterson and the City of Winona for hosting us here today. And even though we heard a lot of local concerns, they really are statewide concerns. You know, we heard the importance of local government aid and looking at potentially a new formula. You're looking at what drives costs. It's health care, it's infrastructure, it's public safety, all those things. State-assessed properties. The state shifting costs on the counties and mandates and all of these things. So these are all huge issues that you're going to be really busy with. So this was very, very valuable. Thank you all for being here. Members, thank you. And with that, we have a few more days here in Winona. We have, at what time is our meeting in Caledonia? 3 p.m. We're moving on to Representative David's district. That's
the Warriors.
All right, go. And we'll be in Caledonia at 3 p.m. And that is at
the IRRB.
Four Seasons Community Center. So if anyone wants to come out, again, we're going to be talking about property taxes, a little more emphasis probably on agriculture. But thank you again. And with that, we are adjourned.